Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
The Rutgers Center of Innovation and Worker Organizing, what they're all about, and the woman behind it. Also on the show today, a new service from the United Labor Agency. Welcome to the Wednesday, March 6th edition of America's Workforce, where we're available on at least five platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. Well, in honor of Women's History Month, we are featuring a woman who is truly making history. Her name is Marilyn Snyderman, and she serves as executive director of the Center for Innovation in Worker Organization, and she is a distinguished professor of professional practice, labor studies, and employment relations at Rutgers. What a story she has. For 10 years, Marilyn directed the National AFL-CIO's Department of Field Mobilization, where she helped launch the National Union Cities Initiative. The campaign focused on increasing the capacity to support and win organizing, political and policy campaigns in states and cities throughout the country. She also worked with the AFL-CIO's International Union, state feds, central labor councils. The program that she was involved in was designed to unite community, union, religious, and civil immigrant rights groups to build local movements to fight for social and economic justice. Prior to her work at the AFL-CIO, she served as education director at the Teamsters International Union and on the senior faculty of the George Meany Center for Labor Studies, where she focused on leadership training, civil and women's rights, labor community organizing. She also served on the faculty at the Georgetown University Law School and was the community organizer at AFSCME. She consulted with a number of national unions on organizer training, organizational development, leadership and management, and in executive coaching. She edited the Organizing Guide for Local Unions and Numbers That Count, which introduced the organizing model of unionism. But wait, there's more. She also co-authored Labor in the Pulpits with Kim Bobo. She started her work in the labor movement as an AFSCME shop steward, local officer, and delegate to her labor council, and that was in Madison, Wisconsin. She's got a heck of a history, and I want to tell you, at the Center for Innovation and Worker Organizing, the CIWO, they do some incredible work, and we're going to talk about that with Marilyn, because we're pretty much at the crossroads right now, and it's so important. We had a great year last year for union organizing, and Marilyn was a part of that, but we got to keep the momentum. We got to move forward and make sure, because you know, not a lot of labor people here working on organizing campaigns. You know it is not easy. So Marilyn Snyderman will be our first guest on the show, and later we're going to start this segment off with Dave Meganhart. Now, Dave's been a longtime sponsor of America's Workforce, and he heads the United Labor Agency, ulagency.org. And he was telling us in previous episodes that they were working on expanding their counseling service. So joining Dave will be Alicia Borman. Now, Alicia was hired to help out the ULA, because when you think about all the problems workers have today, well, we got to have some counseling, because there's a lot of things. There's a lot of stress in the environment. The whole situation with inflation, making ends meet, demands on workers today. It's so important that there is somebody to help, and Alicia Borman is that person. So Dave Meganhart and then Alicia Borman will be joining us as our second guest right here on America's Workforce. And now a brief look into the world of labor. This segment brought to you by the good folks at Boyd Watterson Asset Management. You can find more at boydwatterson.com. Actually, not too much news to report today, but what I want to do is do a shout out for one of our great sponsors. We're talking about the United Auto Workers, and if you go to uaw.org, they recently posted the 2024 cars and trucks and SUVs that are all made by the UAW. I mean, the list starts off with the Cadillacs. There's a number of Cadillacs on there, the CT4, CT5. They got electric vehicles on there. Of course, you got the Chevy Corvette there, Chevy Malibu, lots of trucks, the Chevrolet Colorado, Ford F-150, Buick Enclave in the SUV category. You got the Ford Escape, the Ford Bronco, Ford Explorer, the GMC Acadia. And they also point out that some of these vehicles are made by Unifor, which is formerly the Canadian Auto Workers. So do check that out, uaw.org, for all the information. Buy American, buy Union. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Marilyn Snyderman will be joining us from the Center for Innovation in Worker Organization at Rutgers. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. You can find more at ifpte.org.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans, and we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers, and we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at UAW.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at cwa-union.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Labor Federation. Let's go to line number one and welcome another newcomer to the show. And as I indicated at the top of the show, March is Women's History Month. And our first guest, well, she is making history. And she's got a very rich labor history. Her name is Marilyn Snyderman. Marilyn directs the Center for Innovation in Worker Organization and is a distinguished professor at Rutgers School of Management and Labor Relations. And I'll tell you, she's got an interesting story, and she's going to tell it here on America's Workforce because she's not alone. Her husband also involved in a union, SEIU. We'll talk about that as well. But my first question, I would assume you were among the many Marilyn Snyderman that walked out at Rutgers in their first, what was it, the first time in their history? Wasn't it like 200-year-plus history at Rutgers, something like that?
It was a very exciting strike and really important, and total engagement across the university, and as importantly, with students, with community organizations. Anyway, it was an extraordinary strike, and I was really proud to be part of it, yes.
And we covered it intently here on America's Workforce. Yeah.
Wonderful.
We had a lot of conversations with a number of professors over there who are on the picket line. Let me ask you this. Is everything okay now? The settlement, are we okay going forward at Rutgers?
So here's the other thing that you're going to hear me say over and over again is organizing never stops. So I think the union keeps getting stronger, all the unions, but we have to keep organizing. So there were things that we wanted that we haven't gotten yet, but that's life, and you have to keep organizing.
That's right. As soon as you're done, you got to start all over again. Well, exactly. Let's take a look at how
you
got in.
Well, hopefully build on what you didn't get.
Exactly. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you for correcting me on that. I appreciate that. Let's go back to 1975. I remember that year very, very well. That was the year I graduated from college, and I was already in radio. I was in rock and roll radio at that time, and I'm reading that you were an activist in AFSCME, American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. How did that happen? What drove you there?
So I would go back even before 1975 and say I grew up in Erie, Pennsylvania. And it's, I think, in terms of conditions that kind of shape who we become, there's something about growing up in the Rust Belt in the 60s and 70s that would, you know, just really open my eyes quickly to gender injustice, racial injustice, economic injustice, and absolutely climate. I'm in Lake Erie. It was complicated. So, you know, just in terms of understanding the Rust Belt and the working class in Erie was a huge part of what shaped me. You know, GE went on strike, Hammer Mill went on strike, my teachers went on strike. Activism just was part of my core. Mm-hmm. So when I went to Madison, Wisconsin, I ended up getting a job as a typist and to put myself through college. And it took me probably one day to start paying attention to the workplace. I worked for the state. And I walked in, and all the outside offices in this big, you know, floor, it was all white men on the external offices with the windows. And lots of women inside, you know, on the inner part in the cubicles. And I started trying to understand what was happening and then focused on changing it. So if there's something you'll learn about me in every single role is that, you know, I need to push the boundaries. And I'm really inspired, you know, just driven and inspired to change the world and make it more just. And every position, every role I've been in, I'm not going to settle. I'm going to try to change things.
I like that. AFSCME International picked up on you, so obviously they saw something they liked in Marilyn Snyderman. Can we talk about that? What did you do there?
Well, the one other thing I'd go back to is, you know, I was a rank and file member. I was a shop steward in Madison. And rather than just kind of focusing on traditional grievances, I was already looking at collective and systemic, you know, change that had to happen. And go through story after story about making that happen. And then I was also, these are both significant for later on in my life, but I also became a delegate to a labor council that had the reputation of being, again, a more progressive labor movement in Madison. But when I walked in, it was, again, all white men in leadership kind of looking at us like, what are we doing there as delegates? Mm-hmm. And so both of those experiences, again, helped inform what I ended up doing later. So when I went to AFSCME International, I basically said to them that we needed to have a community organizing program. And they kind of looked at me like, who are you? Like, why are you coming and proposing this? But this is now in the what I talked about before was 1970s. In the 1980s, when I went to AFSCME, I said, it was during a time of a lot of contracting out and privatization, and a lot of the fights were fighting for protecting our jobs, the impact of privatization and contracting out on our communities. And so I put together this proposal of doing campaigns and bringing, like, at a bringing in family members of patients, bringing in lots of, you know, faith leaders and others to be part of this fight with us. And they said, well, try it out. We had a project first, and it was successful, and started actually winning real campaigns. And so I became the community action coordinator at AFSCME. Again, it wasn't the traditional role. It was kind of driving to change things.
Okay, Marilyn, after that, and I know you eventually got to the AFL-CIO, but you did a stint with the Teamsters. What happened in that role?
There was a major reform, you know, we had a major reform movement at the time. And Ron Kerry was elected president of the Teamsters Union to basically try to challenge mobbed up locals, corrupt locals. And it was a really exciting time. And I became the National Union's education director. It was all around, you know, really engaging members again. It was about, we did the first ever civil rights conference at the Teamsters, women's conference at the Teamsters. We really tried some dramatic things at the Teamsters Union to basically give the union back to the members and to engage folks, and had the historic, both there was a freight strike, there was also the UPS strike that was well known. I was one of three women in management, and I still to this day have a pink Teamster jacket, just, you know, with my name embroidered right above a truck. But again, it was all about pushing the boundaries and trying to do as many dramatic things as we could at the Teamsters Union. But then, as you're right, then I got a call from the National AFL-CIO, and I was actually reluctant to leave the Teamsters, but it was to become the National Field Director, Field Mobilization Director for the National AFL-CIO. There'd never been a woman in that role before. It was the biggest department in the National AFL-CIO.
Okay, if you don't mind, let's stop right there, Marilyn, because you were talking about you know, predominantly male, white males in leadership of unions. And here, all of a sudden, here comes Marilyn Snyderman. How were you accepted at that time? That had to be a challenge for you.
Boy, I walked into at the time it was called Field Services Department, and folks in that department took one look at me and said, oh my God, you were really bringing diversity to the department. All the professional staff, I think except for one, were white men. Really nice people, right? But it changes things. And so this really was, how do we operate differently? What's the work we're doing? How, I mean, it was, my job was to transform it around racial, gender, and economic justice. And that's what I set out to do.
And then Union Cities was launched. Mm-hmm. Can you explain? I kind of remember about talking about Union Cities, and John Sweeney was a big promoter of that. What was Union Cities all about?
So the bottom line is, if the labor movement is really going to change, it needs to, it has to happen in community by community. It's not what happens in D.C. It really is what happens in Cleveland, Ohio, and Los Angeles, and Seattle, and Memphis, Tennessee. It's like what's happening throughout the country, and how do we have a very different vision for unions working together strategically and in real alignment with community organizations to try to build a different kind of world. And so, like, during that time, we did things like the WTO in Seattle, right? The World Trade Organization, where there were Teamsters and Turtles, was part of the theme, or the Immigrant Worker Freedom Ride, to try to change what was happening around immigration at the time. We had lots of things happening, but each of them has to happen in a place, in a community. So what Union Cities was about was trying to change what had been some pretty moribund labor councils, which was, remember early on I said I'd been a delegate to a labor council? My goal was to change them, and how do you make them vibrant and inspiring and visionary? And part of Union Cities, that was part of it, was to bring together both union leaders and community allies together to say, what kind of community do we need to have? Who's in control of the community now, right? And how do we make sure that there's real working people's voices shaping what happens in our communities? So it was like, how are we building in a concrete way political power? Who's running for office, right? Including on the city council and the mayor and the school board. How are we growing? How are we supporting organizing efforts of each other's? How are we in really deep partnership with community organizations? How do we have real diversity of leadership so that that BIPOC and white women are in leadership positions and organizer positions? We had a whole kind of strategy of like, what are the elements? And then how do communities go about really reaching that? And then when you have campaigns, you actually have the infrastructure to build to really carry out what, you know, the kind of changes we need in this country.
Change from within. Ironically, this conversation we're having right now is the same thing we're talking about today. So we're going to talk more about that. Joining us on our live line today is Marilyn Snyderman. She is the executive director of the Center for Innovation in Worker Organization. Also, distinguished professor of professional practice, labor studies, and employment relations. And she's at Rutgers University. We'll continue right after this.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's L-I-U-N-A. org.
Attention members of the Heat and Frost Insulators Union who are interested in traveling. Central Ohio has more construction projects on the books than anywhere in the U.S. Mega projects, large and medium-sized jobs are creating more work than our local 50 brothers and sisters can handle. Projects like Intel, the Honda LG battery plant, and multiple data centers for Facebook, Google, and Amazon offer union wages, overtime, and exciting incentives. Local 50 is seeking union travelers to meet the needs of its signatory contractors who can put you to work immediately. If you're a member in good standing and interested in the work opportunities in Central Ohio, visit insulators50.com/AWF travel. For more information. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at usw.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Anthem Blue Cross and Blue Shield, labor's trusted health partner, bringing people, communities, and care together to transform the future of health. For more information, please visit anthem.com/labor and trust. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Iron Workers. You can find more at ironworkers.org.
A great union requires a reliable election system. Survey and Ballot Systems is a trusted election partner with more than 30 years of expertise in managing union elections. By partnering with SBS, your union can ensure it gets an auditable process and a high level of customer service. SBS is here to help you conduct your union vote securely, transparently, and with trust building always in mind. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, where you can find more at teamster.org. America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at liuna.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on at least five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so please keep them coming.
By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org.
Let's go back to our live line and rejoin Marilyn Snyderman. She is a distinguished professor at Rutgers University, one of many that went on strike last year for better wages and working conditions there. But we want to talk about what's going on with organized labor today. And I sent you an email about what happened last year. Last year was an incredible year. Double-digit raises for 900,000 brothers and sisters in labor, Teamsters, auto workers, my union, SAG-AFTRA. We had healthcare workers. And what I want to talk about right now, well, we got to keep that momentum going. I mean, we all have to keep that going. The Center for Innovation and Worker Organization. I mean, I want you to explain what that's all about, because we are seeing a lot of organizing right now. And a lot of it, I mean, it's very, very good. One of the big problems, though, as you well know, is getting that first contract. I mean, I look at the Amazon workers in Staten Island. I mean, they organize, but no first contract yet. We got a lot of independent unions out there. I'd like to get your take on that. But about the center that you're involved with, explain to our listeners what that's all about.
The Center for Innovation and Worker Organization has been designed after talking with lots of both labor leaders, community leaders, and others who are just focused on what's happening and also what's not happening currently in the movement. And so when I first decided to set up this center, I asked people what was missing, and they said, we need a place that has both, you know, a place where we can talk frankly and actually strategize together across the movement about new strategies. How do we learn lessons about what's working and also what's not working? And that's actually as important as what is working, because I think as a movement, we often don't ask ourselves hard questions or learn from what we've tried. So there's a whole part of CWO that is about innovative strategies, but it's also how do we then support leaders, particularly BIPOC leaders, white women, who are taking a lot of risks trying new things, and how do we support them in their leadership? We have a program there called Will Empower, which is we innovate labor leadership, and we have cohorts about that. I'll get into that later, but it's about new strategies, about supporting risk-taking, visionary, radical leaders, and also about how do we have sustainable, healthy organizations. Because oftentimes in our movement, we have lots of wonderful folks trying to do important work. We're often siloed from each other, and we're, you know, kind of running ourselves into the ground. And so how do we really look at, to me, you have to have all three. You have to have supported leaders, supported visionary leaders, healthy organizations, and we have to keep pushing the edges on innovative strategies. Where are we going, and how are we learning from each other as a movement, as a whole ecosystem? So that's what CWO does. We convene people across the movement. We have, if you ever look at our website, we've got, we have a whole advisory committee for bargaining for the common good, which I think is one of the most kind of visionary, pretty radical strategies that many folks are taking on, an increasing number are taking on today. And what we do is we convene folks from the Chicago Teachers Union, from AFSCME 3299, from folks around the country, from Rutgers as well, to really strategize about what we're doing differently, what we're learning, and sharing it, and also problem solving with each other, like thinking it through. So we have a whole group of leaders talking about that through, and it doesn't matter which union you're from, which community group, you have to be doing the work. So it's really an exciting moment, an exciting time. Minnesota, if you're in Tennessee, if you're in California, if you're in Connecticut, there's extraordinary work happening there and how we're learning from each other about it. And then, as I said, it's also leadership and it's also organizations that you need all three in order to carry out a strategy. You can have the best strategy in the world, but if the leader's constantly under attack and the organization's falling apart, it's we're not going to be successful. So how do we look at all three holistically, but do it in a movement building way?
Marilyn, how long has CWO, and CWO is the Center for Innovation and Worker Organization, how long has it been in effect at Rutgers, and how would you gauge it right now? Are you, and I always
use this line on the show, are you moving the needle in the right direction at this organization?
That's exactly the right question. And I would argue that every economic, racial, and gender justice organization and climate justice should be asking themselves the same question. Right now, so I came to Rutgers in 2014, so we're just hitting our 10th anniversary. And it's interesting you raise this question. We just convened an advisory committee, and it's definitely, if you look who's on it, this is not a rubber stamp committee. It's all kinds of folks who are going to challenge us. And we just had a meeting last Friday where we said, folks, we need you to challenge us. Are we doing, I mean, when I think about this moment, this is both a moment of extraordinary opportunity. We see, as you mentioned early on, there is real organizing, innovative organizing, lots of creativity out there. There's also major peril we're facing. I mean, serious challenges, challenges to democracy, race, gender. I mean, you name it right now. It's a frightening time as well. So how are each and every one of us asking ourselves the question, are we moving the needle, right? It's like, are anything we're doing that is not changing the world right now, we should stop doing. It may sound good. It may have, you know, it may be an old tradition that we've had. We should just stop it and keep pushing ourselves to what we should be doing right now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting you point that out, because there is opportunity and people have seized on that opportunity. But my God, the peril, the challenges,
yes,
they're there.
Yes.
And we,
yes,
yeah, we have to overcome them. We got to unite. And you know, what the other side does. It's divide, divide, divide. I mean,
exactly.
That's it. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. Yes.
That's what solidarity is all about. You gotta
right,
stick together. That's what collective bargaining is all about. And they don't want that. They don't want that at all. Let me ask you this. You talk about the radical parts. And I call it the militancy. And we're seeing some examples of militant leaders today. I bring up Sean O'Brien of the Teamsters. I mean, look what he was able to get for his members at UPS. And he came out swinging. I mean, he was elected because he said, hey, I'm going to get a good contract because the last one stunk. Sean Fain is another. That was a very, very close vote there. But he was very vocal. He has an interesting strategy, too, that how he approached the big three. Is this the wave of the future, in your opinion? What do you think?
So, you know, I thought the UAW strike was off the charts. It was really great. And I thought the way they did it, engaging members, really bringing a lot of creativity, the way they promoted the strike, the communications was off the charts. I mean, it was really inspiring. I think what I keep thinking about today is that the thing that I keep going back to is we've got to keep growing as a movement. We've got to be more and more engaged. I think at this moment, given the perils, even if we as a labor movement get stronger on our own, if we don't figure out how to engage other allies, the rest of the progressive movement, those fighting, because our members are not only at work, they're whole workers, right? They live in communities, they rent their houses, they own their houses, they go to public schools, they are living with climate change right now. Like, how are we intentionally engaging the rest of the progressive movement so that we're building more power is one of the other things that I keep thinking about, that we need to have both the internal internal militancy but we need to also be thinking about how we're going bolder and bigger. And some people would say, wow, that's getting almost too distracting. You know, it's going to be harder. I would say it's like the most important way we can win right now. Mm-hmm. So that's the one other thing I'd add. My hat's off to folks really trying to make change, to do a lot of bold and different work, but that it needs, I am really concerned, as I said, keeps me up at night is the perils of the world and how the labor movement is so central to going after all these other challenges as well.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. You teach labor studies. You're involved with teaching organizing. You got, we mentioned the Center for Innovation and Worker Organization. So you're working with unions. Today's students, talk to me about your students. Do they get what's going on? I mean, are they listening to Marilyn Snyderman and saying, hey, you know what? We have that opportunity, but we have challenges. What do you think of this generation that's coming up here, Marilyn?
I'm actually hopeful for this generation. I have so many folks who say to me that they're interested both in what's been done before, but then how to build on it. Because the one thing you will never hear from me is for somebody has a new idea and I say, that we tried it before and it didn't work. I will never say that, because I think a lot of young people are coming with so much energy, so much awareness in the world. They're living it and they're scared when you think about the perils. Mm-hmm. And it's like, how do we, in fact, like what I think about constantly is how to both engage them, how to connect, and how to support the militancy they're bringing to the world right now, the kind of protests they're leading. I'm actually really hopeful about them. Super hopeful.
Yeah, the pandemic definitely changed a lot in America, yes. Especially with the younger generation. And we're seeing a lot of organizing, especially among those 18 to 34. I know the AFL-CIO has been watching that. So it is definitely a bright spot. We just got to continue the momentum on that and see.
And it wasn't just the pandemic. It was even within the pandemic, you know, the murder of George Floyd and like the, just in terms of all the racial justice uprisings, the Women's March. I mean, there's a lot of the climate work. It is like, to me, it's like, how do we knit this together? Because they're all intersectional, like they're mm-hmm. all connected to each other. And this is the life my kids are going to be facing, right? Or are facing. So how do we end this whole new generation? And so how do we weave it together, knit it together, so we can really build the power to fight together?
Yeah. Yeah, the social media has brought all that out. Everybody sees what's going on, and a lot of it they don't like. They don't like, and they're speaking out on it. Marilyn, it was a pleasure and an honor to have you on. It was worth the wait. This woman here is hard to track down. She's very, very busy, and for good reason. I mean, she's the executive director of the Center for Innovation and Worker Organization. I'm going to get this website out here. It is smlr.rutgers.edu. Okay, those of you listening, a lot of information posted there. Rutgers, New Brunswick School of Management and Labor Relations, smir.rutgers.edu. Marilyn, all I can say is you keep up the fight. I mean, that's what we do each and every day here at America's Workforce. I love doing this show. This will be my 26th year of hosting this show.
Great.
And we're getting tons of downloads. Last year was a banner year for us. We just got to continue the momentum. There's a lot of people that want to come on board and be sponsors of the show because, you know what, we're talking about what's going on with workers in their minds, what they're doing each and every day, what they have to deal with, and what they think they have to deal with down the road. So thank you so much for joining us here on America's Workforce, and we'll talk down the road, I promise, okay?
Can I add one last thing, which is the questions you're asking? My husband and I did write a piece in the last year called Making Hope and History Rhyme. Building a new worker movement out of the shell of the old. And so that will share a lot of our insights as well over the years.
Thank you for calling attention. And those of you listening, you can Google that, Making Hope and History Rhyme. It'll take you right there. Marilyn,
Thank you so much. We'll be in touch, I promise.
Thank you so much.
All right, we're going to take a quick break right now. When we come back, the United Labor Agency and the new service they are providing. Back in a few minutes. Don't go away.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The Iron Workers Great Lakes District Council, consisting of 8 iron worker local unions in West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Michigan. We build the skylines and bridges along the Great Lakes. With more work than ever before, the Great Lakes District Council is actively searching out the next great iron worker. Whether it's building the next Intel plant or constructing a bridge to safely connect our great cities along the lake. So join the Iron Workers Great Lakes District Council today. Find out how and learn more about the council by visiting iwdistrictcouncil.com. This portion of the show brought to you by the International Union of Bricklayers and Allied Craft Workers. For more information, please visit bacweb.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
The Alliance for American Manufacturing is a nonprofit, nonpartisan partnership formed back in 2007 by some of America's leading manufacturers and the United Steelworkers. Their mission is simple: strengthen American manufacturing and create new private sector jobs through smart public policies. Key word there is smart. We need to be smarter than ever in today's highly competitive world. The Alliance for American Manufacturing believes that an innovative and growing manufacturing base is vital to America's economic and national security, as well as providing good jobs for future generations. Good jobs today, good jobs tomorrow. Good American jobs. Find out more at AmericanManufacturing.org. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Heat and Frost Insulators Labor Management Cooperative Trust. Find out more at insulators.org/LMCT.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number 2. Welcome back. One of our great sponsors here, that would be the United Labor Agency, ulagency.org. And we have actually 2 people on line number 2 right now. We have Dave Meganhart, who for many, many years, well over 3 decades, has been with the ULA. And joining him today is Alicia Borman, who is going to talk about their new counseling service. So, Dave, I'm going to start off with you. Welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us. But you and I have had conversations over the months and years about, well, ever since the pandemic happened, there's a lot of people struggling out there. And we need, well, there's a demand for counselors, and we're going to get to Alicia here in a minute here. But talk to me about what the ULA is providing here. Let's start there, and then we'll go to Alicia. Okay? Does that work?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, great. It's always great to be back. And you're right, Flash. I mean, we've had this ongoing conversation about the increasing need for mental health services, you know, in our work with workforce development, you know, the people that are coming in that are unemployed through no fault of their own, or if they're looking for better work. You know, we've noticed a trend over the years of this increased concern of the mental health in the community. And, you know, we were very thoughtful about it. We were, we thought about it, you know, quite a bit, and decided that we needed to provide counseling in-house. We had an easy way for people that are coming into our services, or even our union brothers and sisters who are out there in the workforce that are experiencing difficulties or need to talk to somebody. How do we get them help? How do we get them effective help? How do we provide the services that they need? And we said, well, we're going to start a counseling center. And that was about a year ago. We did all of the research that we thought we needed to do. We went and hired a clinical director, who is Alicia, who's going to explain what the services are far better than I can. And we are open for business as of January 1. So it's very exciting. I think it's going to be a great service for Union Brothers and Sisters, our Union Brothers and Sisters, and for the community. There's a desperate need for mental health services, and not only are we going to provide that, but we're also going to use our workforce development experience and help, you know, grow the industry, help find new counselors, and have an impact on that. So with that, I think I'd turn it over to Alicia to talk about what services that we are providing.
All right, Alicia, why don't you pick it up from there? Can you be specific on what you're providing for the workforce out there right now?
Yes, absolutely. thank you, Dave. That was a great kind of introduction to how well thought out the ULA really has been in this process. my name's Alicia, and I'm the clinical director. We are working diligently to provide a variety of services at the ULA Counseling Center. These services include individual counseling, counseling for families, counseling for couples, youth, adults. We're really open to serving any population. We are also offering these services in our office downtown right now, as well as virtually. So via telehealth, it's really simple. You'd get a link if you feel like that's appropriate or a little less kind of threatening than coming into an office. And then we will also meet in the community. So, you know, if there's a place that individuals maybe feel safe or feel supported that we can go to already that has a space where we can meet confidentially, we will do that as well. So we're really trying to eliminate barriers for people and increase accessibility for services to reduce any sort of stigma that might be associated with seeking services for mental health, as well as just to make it a little bit easier for everyone.
Alicia, how long have you been doing this? And I just want to know, I want to get an assessment on how desperate this situation and how desperate people are right now. And again, you know, the pandemic kind of cast a light on this. But in your experience, how bad is it?
Yeah, so I've been a licensed professional clinical counselor for quite some time. I have my independent license. I've been working in the field of mental health and support for about 12 years. And you're definitely right. COVID jumped us ahead several years that we were not anticipating in the mental health field. The need was pretty significant prior to COVID, and that just really made it a lot worse. I have seen since COVID a lot of people dealing with increased levels of anxiety about leaving their home, about being out, getting sick, increased levels of depression because of the amount of loss that people experienced during the pandemic, whether it was immediate loss, meaning like an immediate family member or friend, distant, or even just being a part of a lot of the news castings that we saw, you know, that exposure to the amount of trauma in the country and around the world that everyone was experiencing, that caused a lot of anxiety and depression for people, as well as trauma. Not to mention, especially for kiddos, you know, we saw a lot of kids, especially the early aged ones, who would have normally been in preschool or kindergarten and are now entering first or second grade with limited social skills, limited structure that they would have gotten in a school setting for that year and a half or so that they were maybe out. So a lot of struggles there. And then, you know, people returning to work. A lot of people chose for their own health and safety to stay at home as opposed to going back into the workforce. And now they're torn, you know, about what they want to do and what's going to be the right direction for them. So it has really gotten pretty bad. And it has also increased the number of mental health professionals that have decided to go into private practice. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that, but it has limited some of the accessibility of counselors in community mental health settings that maybe accept a broad range of insurances for services like commercial insurance, Medicaid. A lot of private practices primarily focus on commercial or self-pay. So a lot of the other populations have kind of gone underserved.
Yeah, yeah. People are going where the money is. And I had this conversation not too long ago with one of the one of our guests that was dealing with the Veterans Administration, and they have these Veterans Resource Centers, many of them, and a lot of them are way understaffed today because of what you just said. They figure, oh, man, we could do a whole lot better in the private sector. Another question for you here, Alicia, and thank you for joining us today. Alicia Borman is joining us, and this is all about the new counseling service at the United Labor Agency. ulagency.org is a website. That's a good start for those of you listening. But the stigma of mental health, and that's been a problem. People are suffering, and they don't want to talk about it. They feel embarrassed about that. In your opinion, and you got a lot of years of experience, how can we overcome that? What's your advice to our listening audience right now if they know somebody that's struggling?
That's a great point and a great question. I would definitely say it's important to be supportive and normalize those feelings. So going back to the stigma, a lot of times people feel like they should feel a certain way about incidents or they shouldn't feel a certain way. And then that turns around and they're putting a lot of judgment on themselves and then externalizing feeling that others, if they talk about it, will judge them as well. And so they're holding a lot of that inside. And so if you know someone that's struggling, a great way is to offer support, even just by being a good listening ear, encouraging to, you know, help them find services. Another thing that does help remove some of the that barrier is the accessibility of telehealth, because they don't have to worry about maybe, you know, walking into an office where there might be other people waiting or being seen somewhere. You know, they can do it from the comfort of their own home. But I definitely think that, you know, talking about mental health in regular kitchen table conversations, when you're out to lunch or dinner, just making it part of the normal conversation, asking your friends or family, how are you doing? How are you feeling? And really listening to that and allowing them to vent a little bit and then providing support is really important.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think one of the best slogans, and we've been doing a lot, especially with the building trades, because in construction, and Dave, you know this, in construction, the suicide rate is like 5 times higher. And a lot of that has to do with the work injuries, and it's male dominated. And, you know, a lot of guys just don't want to get help. But the best slogan I heard, it's okay to be not okay. Okay. It's okay to be not okay. But just get the help. All right. I mean, we can deal with that. There's services like what we're talking about today on the show. Dave, let me go back to you, if you don't mind.
Sure.
You started this the beginning of the year. Mm-hmm. How's it being received so far? I know it's pretty, it just started here, but
sure.
So far, how are we looking? So far, so good or what?
Yeah, it's absolutely. I think that even when we were doing our research and talking to people throughout the previous year before we started, we had a lot of encouragement from every quarter, everybody we talked to, from our friends, our funders, people in the community that really have a pulse of what's happening, they were super supportive and they were all very excited that we were going to go on this road. So it's been building. We've had nothing but encouragement. And so that's been great. And, then when we start, you know, now it's getting the word out. Now it's just, finding the folks, you know, and we're really good at that, you know, that we could go, promote our services. We know how to find the people in need. We've already started seeing clients. We've converted part of our offices into the counseling offices. And as it grows, you know, we'll find other locations in which we can move it. So we're very encouraged. We think that it's the right thing to do. It's the right service at the right time. And we couldn't be more pleased.
Certainly a bold move, a smart step indeed. No doubt about that. Well, Dave, thank you for doing what you're doing here. Thanks for being a sponsor. And Alicia, great conversation with you. I'm glad you came to the table to explain to our listeners what the ULA has provided, and so many great services. And certainly this is one that is badly needed, a new counseling service at the United Labor Agency. You can find more at ulagency.org. Alicia and Dave, thank you so much. We'll connect down the road and see how things are going. Is that okay?
That'd be great.
Yep, that would be great. Thank you.
That'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, the rules to win by when it comes to organizing and the latest from the Child Labor Coalition. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.